And now, it's Boomer Life, lifestyle discussion designed to make your life more engaging, meaningful, and complete. Celebrating the baby boomer generation, this is Boomer Life on CIL 650.
And welcome to Boomer Life on CIL 650. I'm Joanne Sutton. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and on Boomer Life today, we're talking about the Parkinson's movement in British Columbia. What is the Parkinson's movement? We're about to find out. Everyone affected by Parkinson's deserves to have the latest tools needed to live the healthiest life possible for as long as possible. At Parkinson's Society British Columbia, their goal is to provide exercise programs specifically designed for people living with Parkinson's disease. Now, joining us in the studio today from Parkinson's BC is their CEO, Jean Blake, along with neurologist Dr. Martin McKeown. Thanks to both of you for joining us in the studio today.
Great to be here.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Jean, let's start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and what's led you to lead the role at Parkinson's British Columbia?
Certainly. I've had about close to 12 years now working in nonprofits, including close to several years at Parkinson's and 4 years at Alzheimer's, 6 years at diabetes. And I think a lot of what I do is work to increase the awareness about the disease and the work of the society and the things that can help people live a fuller and healthier life while dealing with the issues that come about as part of a chronic disease.
Tell us a little bit more about what is the actual society. What is Parkinson's Society British Columbia? We know it's a nonprofit organization founded back in 1969. Tell us a little bit about what they actually do and how it works.
Yeah, we have a 1-800 line that's accessible throughout the province of British Columbia, and we talk to people, give them information, help them navigate some of the healthcare issues, give them referrals. We'll do longer-term consultations, and actually during April, we are launching a new short-term counseling service. We also run programs across the province, including regional conferences, a program called Voice and Swallow to help people deal with some of the issues that almost everybody with Parkinson's will have to deal with at some point in time. And we've really been advocating and trying to find ways to support people to exercise. Exercise shows that in most cases, you can better control your symptoms that come along with Parkinson's disease. And increasingly, research is also showing that there may be a neuroprotective impact. So actually, the whole population, we encourage them to get out and exercise. But our work is obviously targeting those affected by Parkinson's disease.
So how do you bring your message into the communities of British Columbia?
We have a network of 50 support groups across British Columbia. They're very active. They are led by volunteer leadership, and they get the message out there, work to support one another. They meet usually at least monthly, and often it's around issues, sharing how different people have dealt with particular problems that come up with Parkinson's. Also exercise. Many of our support groups have now launched an exercise component that goes along with meeting for support.
And how do you collectively work with the medical community to substantiate that message you're trying to get into the public?
Well, they're really key, obviously. A disease like this, somebody can live with it for many, many years, and it needs to be a regime of that exercise along with appropriate medication and support from other healthcare professionals as well. So the exercise component is really key in terms of if you have health professionals like physiotherapists or even certified physical trainers that know about the issues that come along with Parkinson's, then they can design and provide exercise and treatment that is focused on Parkinson's issues. On the other side, the medication side, as you said, we've got Dr. McKeown here in the studio with us, the access to appropriate medication regimes and other treatment regimes that they can provide are really vital. And that's a really big issue. We've only got the Movement Disorder Clinic at UBC and one that started out in Surrey about 2 years ago. So access to those movement disorder specialists is a real problem for British Columbians living with Parkinson's disease. And so that's also part of our issue.
Absolutely, such a key issue as well. This would be a natural time to introduce Dr. Martin McKeown. You've got an interesting background. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and where you came from?
Well, I'm a clinical neurologist with an interest in movement disorders, and I'm the director of the Parkinson's Clinic at UBC. In a former life, I was an engineer, so I have an active research program trying to help people with Parkinson's, and we often use engineering principles to try and assist people with Parkinson's.
That's great. Can you give us an accurate but, a simple definition of what Parkinson's disease actually is?
Yeah, well, Parkinson's is a brain disease where one part of the brain starts to degenerate. And this results in many varying symptoms ranging from tremor and stiffness to slowness of moving and walking, depression, or even constipation and loss of smell. It typically affects older individuals, but we occasionally see people in their 40s or even younger with the disease. One of the characteristics of the disease is that it progresses very differently amongst individuals. Some people in our clinic are doing very well even decades after the initial diagnosis, and others have not fared as well. As for incidence, by next year we may be seeing as many as 200,000 Canadians with Parkinson's disease. The number will probably continue to grow as our population ages.
Those are staggering numbers.
They are. In 2011, it was estimated that 12,000 British Columbians had Parkinson's disease, although the number is probably substantially higher now.
So in your eyes, how do you see that Parkinson's disease could be managed?
Well, currently there's no cure for the disease. The best that we could do is to treat some of the symptoms and try and slow the progression of the disease. In my view, Parkinson's disease is best managed by a team approach, which includes nursing, physiotherapy, occupational therapy, social work, pharmacy, in addition to medical input. Medically, most of the treatments work on replacing the natural brain chemical dopamine, which is deficient in Parkinson's disease. There is surgery for Parkinson's disease, which is an effective therapy where essentially a pacemaker is put into the brain. But unfortunately, not everyone is a surgical candidate, and the waiting list for the surgery in BC, at least, is very long.
Wow. Three years.
3 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Jean had mentioned a lot about the importance of exercise that society is trying to promote. What can you speak on the exercise factor in the means of symptom control?
Well, it's certainly true that exercise is an excellent treatment for Parkinson's disease. We do know that in general, people who are more physically active tend to have slower progression of the disease and better symptom management. But the big question is, and I think this is still an open question, is what type of exercise is best? So there have been some things, for example, that have shown, for example, Tai Chi is very good for balance in Parkinson's. Probably, at least based on some research work, it probably has to have some sort of aerobic type exercise, enough to get you to sweat, to kind of stimulate some of the hormones that result in beneficial effects to the brain. We're certainly involved in a number of research studies looking at exercise as a treatment as well.
Excellent. So if somebody were sitting at home with a little red flag waving in the back of their mind and wondering if some of the symptoms and some of the experiences they're having right now at this moment in their life and that they're concerned it could be Parkinson's, what would some of those first telltale signs be or warning signs?
Well, one of the early signs would be, for example, a bit of stiffness. So it's not unusual that we would see people presenting initially with what's thought to be a frozen shoulder. And when you look back, it's really because they weren't swinging one arm when they were walking. Very often it'll be the partner who will notice that someone is shuffling and walking, moving more slowly. Tremor is a common thing. Excuse me. And there's also been some suggestion that things like loss of smell may be an early sign of Parkinson's as well.
Interesting. So if someone is experiencing some of those symptoms, first thing they should do is go and see their doctor?
Yes, I think that would be highly advisable. So there are some things that may slow progression of the disease, such as exercise. So it would probably be beneficial to exercise no matter what.
That's wonderful. Jean, can you speak a little bit about the actual Parkinson's movement? Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of Parkinson's Awareness Month right now, and let us know what we can do and what's happening.
great. Thank you. So for April, Parkinson's Awareness Month, we've launched a movement, the Parkinson's Movement. And it's really about starting where you're at, but to set a goal for yourself for exercise. It might just be walking around the block, for starters. If you're already into exercise, just adding a little bit more, because as Martin said, you got to break a sweat for this to make a bit of a difference. We have on-site program to help people do that if they want to go on and register at parkinson.bc.ca, and we would also be grateful if they want to turn that into a fundraising campaign for us. But the most important message is just get out and exercise. We have a community program that's being launched in about a dozen communities across BC, being led by volunteers, just people getting out and walking together, called Step by Step. So they can also check with us and see if that's something that has been made available in their community. And that's actually launching tomorrow, April 11th, World Parkinson's Day.
Excellent. And Dr. McKeown, how are you involved with Parkinson's Awareness Month?
Well, we like to support the Parkinson's Society of British Columbia any way we can. We routinely advocate exercise to all of our patients as they come through our clinic. Anytime we're asked to give educational talks, we're more than happy to do so. As I said, it's the Parkinson's community is a wonderful community. I feel privileged to be part of it, and I'm happy to do anything we can to support the Parkinson's Society of BC.
Excellent. You're listening to Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and today we're talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement, joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake and neurologist Dr. Martin McKeown, and we've just started the conversation. You can get more information. Please visit their website, parkinson.bc.ca. We'll be right back on Boomer Life.
Celebrating the baby boomer lifestyle. This is Boomer Life on CIL 650. We're back. This is Boomer Life on CIL 650.
We're back. This is Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton, and today we're talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement. Joined in the studio with Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake, and also with us today is physiotherapist Nina Bloomfield. Nina, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent. Now, Nina graduated from the University of Toronto back in 84. She's been practicing physiotherapy in the Tri-Cities for over 25 years. In the past, she's worked in the public health sector at Eagle Ridge Hospital and in home health. Currently, Nina works for Fraser Health in pulmonary rehabilitation, as well as part-time and private practice focusing on neurological physiotherapy. Nina leads some therapeutic exercise and adapted yoga classes for persons with neurological conditions affecting their mobility, as well as specific yoga and active exercise classes for people with Parkinson's disease. Now, Nina, I know there's a lot more to your background, and we hope to expose some of those details, but tell us now how you made that direct connection with what you do in physiotherapy and people with Parkinson's disease.
Well, I guess I've always been drawn to work with people with neurological problems. I'm not sure exactly why, but even with my fairly general experience working particularly in home health, I always, if there was patients with Parkinson's that came with referrals, I would often be the one that would take them on. I've taken some different continuing education classes. I guess it's a real fascination for me with the brain, and certainly the more recent research on neuroplasticity and how the brain actually works and the change within my own career in terms of how we understand neurological problems has really driven me to learn more and then apply that to try to help the patients that I and the people that I encounter.
So it was more of a general interest of yours than a direct connection to say you knew somebody with Parkinson's.
That's correct. And yet when I reflect back, I would say in my first week as a physiotherapist in a hospital in Ottawa, I had a Parkinson's patient, and it's sort of like it stuck with me. And of course, the treatment at that time was completely different than it is now. But over time, it seemed that I was continually drawn to work with people with Parkinson's, and I've always been interested with other working with people with other neurological problems as well.
So can you share with us a little bit of how physiotherapy actually helps a person with Parkinson's disease?
So physiotherapists are basically experts in the movement system, and so a lot of people are more familiar with physiotherapists that work in orthopedics, that after they've had an injury or they have different pain conditions, but really physiotherapists are trained to look at the whole movement system, which includes our muscles, our joints, our nervous control. And also there's a sense that, especially as we understand movement and the general connection of the body systems, there's a big aspect of the mind, the emotions, motivation, and so physiotherapists are really able to integrate looking at the different systems that come into play when we actually go to move, whether you're working with a geriatric person, with a child, an athlete. We're trained at being able to take a holistic approach and try to see what are the factors that we can manipulate, we can improve. I'm a strong believer that there's always something that can be changed, and I'm always in awe of the human body and the capacity of the human body.
So you're obviously up for the challenge. Maybe you can tell us or share with us an experience of some of the things you might actually do with a patient.
Well, so particularly when it's working with people with Parkinson's, when you think about the nature of Parkinson's, it's a slowly progressive disease. By the time a person gets their Parkinson's diagnosis, there's actually approximately 70% of the dopamine-producing cells that already have degenerated. So on one hand, it's shocking to think that there's that much degeneration, but then that speaks to the fact of the capacity that the brain has to still manage and enable our body to do its bodily
function.
Despite that. But these issues like slowness of movement, the mood disorders, they're happening slowly and insidiously. And because of the brain's ability to adapt, we learn ways to get around it. But because the nature also of the human person, and nature in general, is to follow the path of least resistance and to create habits in order to find ways to cope with all the multitude of possibilities that there are. So as Parkinson's develops and people's movements start to get smaller, as I think Dr. McCowan described it, sometimes it's not the person that realizes that maybe they're stepping smaller or their arm isn't swinging. It's other people who notice it. So we sort of just adapt to it. So that's neuroplasticity maybe in a negative vein. Then we can take neuroplasticity, which is the ability of movement to change the way the brain operates. We can take it in a positive direction and expose the body to different kinds of movements in order to then relearn. It's really all about skill acquisition and relearning. Just as at any age and stage we can learn new things, people with Parkinson's also have that capability, and they also have other challenges that then make that need to learn even more important.
Almost an adaptability.
Yes, yes. So the adaptability can lead us into the habit that maybe isn't optimal, and then as we expose our body to other ways of moving, so for instance, the example of a small movement, then we, in physiotherapy, we will train people to do certain exercises to push their body beyond what we call the self-selected effort of the movement or the size of the movement, because as we start to move smaller, our brain starts to think that small movement is normal. So we have to almost recalibrate the brain in our movements. But then we also need to look at the issues that anybody might have. Particularly as we get older, maybe as we develop Parkinson's, we slowly become less physically active. We might put it down to our age, but then we might be somewhat weaker. We might be a bit stiffer in general, as well as the Parkinson's causing some rigidity in the body. So we also want to address things like strength, flexibility, balance, and, of course, the cardiovascular system, because fitness is really important for all of us, but especially for people with Parkinson's.
So is pain an actual symptom of Parkinson's?
It certainly can be a symptom of Parkinson's.
So then how would you deal with an individual who says, you know, oh, my gosh, I'm in so much pain. How could I possibly do physiotherapy?
Well, I think, like with everybody, you have to meet them from where they are, and we know that different kinds of movements can help with symptoms of pain. So it's a matter of doing an individual assessment of the person to find out what area can be enhanced. Maybe there's an area that needs to be stiff, and we just start small and continually work with the person in terms of motivating them. But not just motivation, also dovetails with education. So if you educate the person, they understand, then they may have some less fear also associated. We know that fear also takes a big role in kind of propagating behaviors that where people want to avoid their pain. But as we start to explore the edges of the pain, not moving into the pain, but moving into positions where we are comfortable, then we can start to be more comfortable with expanding our movement.
It's all very much a scientific approach. Yeah. Now, when we spoke with Jean in the first segment of the show, you really stressed the importance of exercise. Is this a new discovery that exercise is such a vital component to recovery and maintenance of this disease to be symptom-free?
It's relatively new when you look at the fact that we've known about the disease for a very, very long time. And we still don't know what causes it, and there is no cure, but there has been increasing research around the benefits of exercise. And definitely for symptom control, we've seen that it is beneficial. Again, increasing research around this neuroplasticity motion and also some neuroprotection. There's a thought that if it's not keeping more dopamine-producing cells from dying in the brain, that maybe there are some other hormones that are being replaced that are serving a temporary role of dopamine in helping with movement of the body. So we're really pushing exercise. We say start where you're at. You should, of course, consult your doctor, make sure that it's safe if you have been sedentary for quite some time. But as Nina said, it's about retraining the body. And as much as it's a disease of the brain, if you haven't been using your muscles, you also have to get them back in shape. So
right, you have to feed the brain, which in turn feeds the muscles.
Yeah. And so we really say, you know, get started. We have a program launching tomorrow, World Parkinson's Day, called Step by Step. It's not in every community, although people are welcome to start it if they want. And they can find out more about it by going to our website, parkinson.bc.ca. And the Parkinson's movement is very much about individuals setting their own goals. Again, they can go to our website to find out more about that. And it does have a fundraising component to help us produce even more exercise programs across the province as well to help us fund more research.
Nina, could you talk a little bit more about this power training program?
Sure.
What it is and how it fits into this whole program of Parkinson's?
So certainly there's been a lot of general research into different kinds of exercise that can help with Parkinson's, but there's a number of researchers that have been looking at certain types of exercises that are specifically targeting the symptoms of Parkinson's, as we've mentioned, rigidity, slowness of movement, tremor, problems with posture, balance, etc. So there's a physical therapist from Arizona. Her name is Becky Farley. She's a neuroscientist as well as a physiotherapist, and she's developed a program called POWR, P-W-R, which stands for Parkinson's Wellness Recovery. And she has developed a series of movements and more concepts. It's less of a specific list of exercises and more general concepts that should be included in an exercise program for someone with Parkinson's to basically aim at the specific issues that are presented, that people with Parkinson's present with. And there's a continuum of exercises that can be done along all the stages of the disease. But one of Becky's sort of goals is to eradicate. Parkinson's actually is divided into five stages, where stage five is the stage where a lot of people think about with Parkinson's. It's more when people are very immobile and perhaps bedbound. So her goal is if people with Parkinson's start exercise early and continue doing exercise and continue getting reassessments and advice on how to exercise, that will eradicate stage five. So it's basically about maintaining your function and actually preventing, slowing down the progression of the disease.
What kind of results have you seen from people that have been, or you know, the patients with Parkinson's that are involved in this program?
Well, people really feel more confident, their balance improves, they feel it all, the actual success that they experience from being engaged in an exercise program that is relatively vigorous. People have this sense that, oh, people with Parkinson's, you know, need to exercise gently. No, they have to be pushed in order to cause the changes in the brain that we want to happen. And then that results in a greater sense of self, of confidence, and that itself actually causes a little burst of dopamine into the system for anyone, but especially important for people with Parkinson's, and then that helps them to feel more hopeful about their future. So dealing with a chronic disease is complex and involves the mind, body, and the spirit, and so these exercises can help on many different levels, and part of the POWR program is to not just aim at the physical system, but also at the cognitive, the thinking mind, where you're feeling, and also the autonomic, so that the automatic things like sleep, pain, issues of constipation that Dr. McCowan mentioned, they can all be improved by engaging in a kind of holistic, whole-body exercise program.
Absolutely. So now that we really have it established that it's a disease of the brain, how does depression fit into this?
Well, I mean, I think
it's a factor, obviously.
Absolutely. So we consider Parkinson's as having, it's a movement disorder, so it has motor components, but there also are non-motor aspects of Parkinson's. So depression can be also influenced by the chemical imbalance that occurs with Parkinson's. So it can be actually a symptom of Parkinson's. Some physicians are thinking that that might be an early sign of Parkinson's. And then you can also have the reactive depression when you get a diagnosis and thinking about your future and that kind of the natural stages of grief we go through when we are given bad news can lead to some depression. But then, of course, information, activating, putting control back into your life can be very helpful. And we actually know that exercise is in and of itself is helpful for people with mood disorders if we can, you know, just separate out depression. So really, there's very few medical conditions that exercise isn't good for. And of course, if you do have medical conditions or a combination of different issues, seeing a health professional, a physiotherapist, is really the best way of getting a specific exercise program that meets your needs.
Jean, how does the society help individuals get involved in some of these programs, like the power training, or to actually help them find a physiotherapist, an expert such as Nina?
Yeah. We have a 1-800 referral service, so people can phone us, and we will try to connect them with what's available in their community. And Dr. Farley is coming up. We've brought her up several times before to train physiotherapists. That's happening again this fall. And we have a new training program that she's developed for certified fitness professionals who can get 15 continuing education hours with their professional association. So we'll be advertising that. And again, those physios and fitness professionals can go to our website to find out more information.
Excellent. You're listening to Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton. Today we're talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement. Joined in the studio this afternoon with a Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake and physiotherapist Nina Bloomfield. Join the Parkinson's movement. Thank you, Nina, for joining us today. You can get more information at the website parkinson.bc.ca. This is Boomer Life on CL650.
Canada's only weekly radio show dedicated to the baby boomer lifestyle. This is Boomer Life on CL650. We're back. This is Boomer Life on CL650.
Welcome back. This is Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton. And today we are talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement. Right now I'm joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake. And also in the studio now is John Hogan. Now, John lives up in the North Shore, and he was 52 years old when he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. What began as a slight tremor one morning soon led him to Vancouver General Hospital, and after several days of tests, he received the news. So, John, first, I want to welcome you to the studio today.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Now I'm going to take you back to that day. First, can I ask you how old you are now?
I turned 60 last December.
Okay. So, John, take us back to that day at the age of 52 and when you heard that diagnosis and down that path that led you to the hospital.
Well, I guess I was initially glad to at least have a diagnosis because they'd been poking around my brain for about 3 months to figure out what the what the issue was. Parkinson's wasn't even on the radar screen. At one point in time, I was being told it might be cerebral vasculitis, which is inflammation of the blood vessels in the brain. They tested me for multiple sclerosis because I also have some. During the workup, they found I have lesions on my brain on both hemispheres, which aren't in the pattern of MS. So anyway, it was with all of this, it's the elimination process. So at the end of the 3 days, they said, okay, you can leave. We think you have Parkinson's. And by the way, here's a prescription for levodopa carbidopa. And if the tremor goes away, then it's Parkinson's.
So you actually felt a sense of relief after being poked and prodded and screened and scanned and talking to doctors that you were happy with the diagnosis?
Well, no, I wouldn't say I was happy. At least there's kind of a stake in the ground as to what it was. And, of course, everyone knows Michael J. Fox and Parkinson's. A fellow that my wife worked with was diagnosed in his 50s. And I think she was working with him at the time. And, yeah, so it was it's not something that's in my family. I mean, there's other things floating around my family's gene pool, but not Parkinson's. So it was a bit of a surprise, but, you know, at least there was something to focus on.
Exactly.
And figure out.
Research, educate yourself. So then what did you do from there? Do you go back and have a chat with your doctor, or do you just... Do you head down the path of Dr. Google to try to find out some information, or did you contact the Parkinson's Society?
One of the first things I did was after the neurologist at Vancouver General, not actually out at the Parkinson's Research Center, said, I'm 95% sure it's Parkinson's, then they booked me an appointment about 3 months later out at the Parkinson's Research Center at UBC, where I saw Dr. Stossel, but in the interim, I actually started on medication right away, one particular type of medication, and I also got in touch with the Parkinson's Society, and of course I got on the internet, which, you know, can be a good thing, can be a dangerous thing.
And you said when you go to see your neurologist, you're armed with some of that internet information.
Yeah, that's right. I actually like to say I'm packing my internet medical degree in my wallet.
Tell me a little bit how you've seen the disease progress in this last, I guess, 8 years.
Okay. I guess the best way to describe it, I have what's called tremor-predominant idiopathic Parkinson's. Idiopathic meaning no known cause. Tremor-predominant means it started in my left hand where it kind of resides.
Okay.
So it tremors. And I started initially on one type of medication, one pill a day. I mean, I was taking, you know, vitamins and omega-3 fatty acids and other things like that. And so it was a pretty mild tremor, and this monotherapy was able to handle that for about 2 years. And then in the late fall of 2009, I was working on a project at work, which was fairly intense, and I found my keyboarding with my left hand wasn't that great. So I was compensating by reaching over with my right. And at that point in time, I thought, well, maybe I better phone the research center out at UVC. And they said, well, we think it's time for, you know, the next medication, which is the standard Gould treatment, which is levodopa, carbidopa. So that got introduced in the fall of 2009.
That's okay.
And so that settled the tremor down. I have very little, if any, muscle rigidity. And
in any part of your body? Or are you just talking about your
my
left
side?
Arm?
In any part of my body. And so the progression has been, the last time I was out at the center, they said the progression has been really slow, which is, you know, good.
That's a bonus.
So I'm still on the same two medications, and it's, I would say, they've upped the levodopa carbidopa a little bit. So in 2009, I was on 3 levodopa carbidopa during the day, and now I'm on 6. So it's not a huge, you know, in terms of the change in medication, if you're going to gauge it by that, it's not a huge change.
How would you gauge it in the terms of your physical abilities and how you feel, and how does this affect you on a day-to-day life?
Well,
you still continue to work.
Oh yeah, I still continue to work.
Full time.
I still continue to ski. You know, I haven't. The only thing I stopped doing was running, but that's due to another. Yeah, that was due to a joint issue, you know, about half a dozen years ago. But I'm still doing everything, you know, that I was doing before. I mean, sometimes I'll get, you know, slowness of movement in my hand and stuff like that. But otherwise, it hasn't stopped me from doing anything.
So So you're extremely physically active.
Yeah, I've been pretty physically active all my life, and I've kept that up, particularly after seeing Dr. Farley speak at the Parkinson's AGM back in 2008.
And this is Dr. Farley with the power training program.
Right. Yeah, no, that's right.
Yes. So have you actually participated in one of those programs?
Yes, I went down. My wife and I went down in 2011 to Arizona. Then I went back by myself in 2012.
And what can you tell us about it? How did it change anything with you,
well,
or did you respond?
Actually, maybe the best way to it was actually there was scientific they were doing measurements and stuff like that. So they had a lot of volunteer physiotherapists from the Phoenix area. So they did measurements on certain movement things you could do. They did it pre and post after the session. I think the best way to characterize it was. And there were people, there was a woman there who was 80, so I was likely potentially the youngest, but there was a woman there who was 80, and my wife characterized it the best way by saying, if I hadn't come down and seen it, I might not have believed it. And just the physical change in people during that 1 week in Arizona.
Wow. That's a powerful statement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we were chatting before we started this interview, you actually brought up a funny little story about a conversation that involved exercise, your diagnosis, and your doctor.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was the Mount Seymour story?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I think it was about 3 years ago, and it was a Sunday, March, went up to Mount Seymour. There's lots of snow, unlike this year. And so a friend and I headed up there, and I took my normal dose of medication at, you know, kind of 8:30 in the morning. We got up to the parking lot at 9 o'clock. We went and did the first pump hike on snowshoes, which is about a 400 or 450-meter elevation change. I realized when we got to the parking lot, I didn't have my medication with me. I'd left it at home. We got up to the top, had lunch. Normally at lunchtime, I'd think, you know, my left hand might start tremoring a little bit. It didn't. Had lunch, finished off, went back down. As we got close to the parking lot, maybe about 200 meters, I started to get a little dystonia in my left foot, which I'll just describe as a sustained muscle contraction in your foot, which causes my arch to really elevate.
Like a cramp.
Like a cramp. And so I just kind of chugged through it, and it
went away.
So I actually had medication at roughly 8:30 that morning, and I didn't have any until 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Where normally you would have had some throughout the day.
Yeah, I would have had a noontime dose.
And also, there's no definitive research around this, but because you've been so physically active, John, it's also possible that your symptoms were delayed by a number of years. You might have been diagnosed earlier had you not been physically active.
Yeah, that's right. Because I had, I went to the, and there was no connection at the time, but in the late 90s, my wife noticed when we were sleeping, my legs would twitch. Now, when you go to sleep, your muscles relax, there is that little twitching that happens.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody experiences that.
Yeah, that's right. But I'd have occasional, leg movements and stuff like that. So I went to my doctor, and they didn't define it as restless leg syndrome, but apparently now there's some bit of a connection between having restless leg syndrome earlier on and the prospect of getting Parkinson's later. I'm not sure the connection is definitive, but there's certainly a lot of scientific research going on to that connection.
Mm-hmm. Just from your example of your hiking story, your snowshoeing story, and the fact that you're very active, exercising frequently, I think you're a great leader and a great example of how the effects of exercise help control some of your symptoms. Are you a strong believer that exercise has really benefited you in this situation in your life?
Most definitely. Most definitely. I think generally it's positive for a whole bunch of reasons, a whole bunch of other medical reasons. I think it just has a huge bunch of benefits. You feel better after you exercise, you get the endorphins and whatever else are moving through your system. So you just feel better. And I've actually noticed, even doing treadmill work, that after my exercise in the gym or something like that, if I've had a little bit of a tremor going in later in the day, you know, around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock for my workout, the tremor after the exercise tends to subside. So it's not all exercise. I think it's a combination of exercise and medication.
And positive thinking.
Well, I hope so.
Yes. What would you say is important for us to know about someone that has Parkinson's disease?
It's very individual. I don't have any overt symptoms, but I know people who do have overt symptoms, and you see people walking down the street, and my wife can recognize people who have Parkinson's, and you know, sometimes their arms are moving and they're walking down the street, maybe they look drunk or something like that. People have had people come up to them and say, you know, are you drunk? Have you been drinking or something like that? When it's actually Parkinson's. So that's, you know, I don't know, stage 3 or stage 4 Parkinson's, where the medication you're taking isn't having as much of an impact as it was before. So I think people should be open-minded about what the condition is all about, and be open-minded about, you know, utilizing exercise as a form of therapy.
Absolutely.
If I can just add to that a little bit, is that some people may experience rigidity. At being unable to move rather than the tremor. And so that can be very difficult too, because we hear about people where they all of a sudden can't take a step forward. You're in the middle of a crosswalk. Think about that. You're in a chair. You can't get up. Your face actually can start to lose expression. There may be voice and swallow issues. So it's very individual. There, besides the movement issues, a lot of non-motor issues too that various people may experience with this disease.
Yeah, occasionally I get constipation. That's a non-motor symptom.
Actually, the doctor spoke of that earlier. That was a sign and a symptom that we should be aware of as well. Well, John, I want to say thanks for sharing your story with us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Excellent. You're listening to Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton. Today we are talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement. We're joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake and John Hogan, who was diagnosed with Parkinson's at the age of 52. Please go to their website if you want more information on this disease, parkinson.bc.ca. And we encourage you to join the Parkinson's movement, because tomorrow is World Parkinson Day, correct, Jean?
That's great, yes. We'd really appreciate people going online. The movement is very much about setting an exercise goal. It does also have a fundraising component. The society is dependent 100% on individual donations, and so we really appreciate anyone who can help us out.
Jean Blake is the CEO of Parkinson Society British Columbia. This is Boomer Life on CL650.
Celebrating the baby boomer lifestyle. This is Boomer Life on CL650. We're back. This is Boomer Life on CL650.
We're back. This is Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton. And today we're talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement. We're joined in the studio with Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake and neurologist Dr. Martin McKeown. Now, Jean, for our listeners touched by our message today, could you just give us a little bit of a wrap-up of who the Parkinson's Society of BC actually is?
Oh, thank you. So our purpose is really about helping people who are living with the disease, and also funding research to find a cure. There is no known cause and no known cure. We provide programs and services throughout British Columbia, 1-800 information and referral line. And we're really, through this program, hoping to raise awareness around the benefits of exercise and symptom control.
Tell us a little bit more about the services and how people can get support.
Well, as simple as picking up the phone and calling us, or going onto our website, parkinson.bc.ca. We will do more in-depth consultation, or we've just launched this month a short-term counseling service as well. We have a library. We help people navigate the healthcare system to some degree and provide referrals to other supports. We have across the province over 50 support groups that are led by volunteer facilitators, and many of them have exercise programs attached to them.
Thanks, Jean. And Dr. McKeown, can you please give us a little bit of a snapshot of what Parkinson's disease is?
Parkinson's is a disease of the brain where a particular part of the brain degenerates faster than the other parts of the brain. It typically presents with tremor, stiffness, slowness of movement, but it can also affect other things such as mood, memory, even constipation. It varies a lot from person to person. It's becoming more prevalent as the as our population ages.
So it's attacking the baby boomer crowd?
Definitely. I think we have at least, in 2011 it was estimated there were 12,000 British Columbians with the disease, and it's probably much higher now.
And some of the first symptoms we might see that might raise a little red flag that we might want to run to our doctor about?
People may notice changes in their walking. Very often it's the partner who may notice things. They may notice that one arm doesn't swing as well if they walk. They may notice a tremor if they're just sitting at rest. These are the types of things. Even constipation and loss of smell can be early signs of Parkinson's disease.
Excellent. Thanks for those notes. You're listening to Boomer Life. I'm Joanne Sutton. Today we are talking about Parkinson's and the Parkinson's movement. We're joined in studio with Parkinson's Society BC CEO Jean Blake and neurologist Dr. Martin McKeown. Now, with an understanding that there's currently no known cure and no known cause for Parkinson's, would you both agree that the need for research and funding for research could not be more important at this time?
Oh, certainly. And Martin, maybe you want to weigh in first, because the Movement Disorder Clinic at UBC is really world-class. They're doing some incredible research around exercise.
Well, you know, I think the motto of the Parkinson's Society of Canada is to ease the burden and find a cure. And I think that's a good way to think about research. I think it's good to have a long-term outlook to try and find the ultimate cure, but in the meantime, I think we also have to have research that eases the burden with people who currently have the disease. And I think exercise is not a cure for Parkinson's, but it can greatly ease the burden of the disease.
Could you tell us about some of the research that's actually being done?
Yeah, so we actually have a very active research program at UBC in exercise. One of the things that we're looking at is we know that exercise releases some brain chemicals, including dopamine, which is deficient in Parkinson's. And in fact, UBC is a world leader in PET imaging, which can assess how much dopamine is released from exercise. Another program, which is actually originally out of the University of Calgary, which I think is quite novel, it's being done by a PhD student of mine, and that is it uses an iPod, and it's strapped to your leg, and they listen to music wirelessly through the iPod, and the iPod measures your stride length. So if you start to take short steps, the music cuts out. So it's a constant reminder to take big steps, and this seems to be very important for some of the physiotherapy that we heard about earlier, to constantly remind people to take, you know, very large steps, and this seems to be quite beneficial for people with Parkinson's.
It's amazing. You sound very passionate. You're obviously enjoying what you do.
Yes, it's a very exciting area. You know, the other thing that I should mention is a lot of the things that we learn is what patients tell us, and there's a number of people that will tell us that things like meditation or qigong or yoga, a lot of people will say that they feel very well after doing these things. And so the other area that we're looking at is whether or not this changes the brain waves in a positive way. And so we're also looking into whether or not we can harness this as a potential treatment for Parkinson's.
I'm hearing you say there's hope.
There's definitely hope.
And Jean, what can you speak about the research that's being done and how that's integrated in the programs and services that you offer at Parkinson's Society of BC?
As I said, exercise awareness is a really big campaign for us right now. The Parkinson's movement, it's all about that. And so we rely on some of the researchers at the UBC Movement Disorder Clinic to help us get the message out there. We actually, at each of our four regional conferences this year across British Columbia, have researcher in exercise from the clinic who is speaking. The Parkinson's Awareness Movement is really a campaign that we are asking everybody to get involved with, especially obviously people with Parkinson's, but to start where they're at and to get out there and exercise every day, at least during the month of April. Good time. Spring is always a great time to get out. We have tomorrow, World Parkinson's Day. We're launching a community program called Step by Step. We have community leaders in a number of communities across BC who are leading walks, and they'll be doing encouraging people to get out and walk every day. We also have a website, parkinson.bc.ca. People can get online and register what their exercise goal is for the month of April. And we would ask people to, if they're so inclined, to help us by fundraising in a Friends Asking Friends campaign. That money will go to further support exercise programs and or research. Can I talk a little bit about Dr. Becky Farley here?
Absolutely. I was just going to say it's all about a community coming together and what we could collectively do as a community. And this is a perfect transition to find out more about the program you have called Power Training and this expert that's coming up from Arizona.
Yeah. We've had Dr. Farley up here before. You heard Nina talk. She is a power-trained physiotherapist. We have a program in September, a two-day certification program for physiotherapists. So we're hoping to train about another 50 physios across BC in the Power program. And as well, a new program we're launching for certified physical fitness professionals to incorporate Parkinson-specific exercise in programs in their community, again with Dr. Farley. And again, it will be in September. So we really hope to spread this across more thoroughly across British Columbia.
Excellent. Well, thanks both for your expertise as well. If somebody's just coming home with their first diagnosis today and they're not sure of where to turn, what would be the first step for them? What would you recommend, both Jean and Dr. Michonne?
Well, we would definitely ask them to give us a call on our 1-800 line. We have a lot of information and support services that we can connect people with.
You want them to know they're not alone.
Yes, and our website, too. We have it's a we just actually launched a more user-friendly website earlier this month, and it has a lot of really excellent resources. And again, we've collaborated with the Movement Disorder Clinic in the preparation of those materials.
Yeah, I would strongly advocate or suggest that people get in contact with the Parkinson Society of BC. They're a wonderful organization, and they provide lots of support to people. I think it's very important that people with the disease connect with others. And also, as we heard today, you know, exercise is universally good. So if you have the disease, the more you can exercise, the better things will work out over the long term.
And for your step-by-step program, and tomorrow being World Parkinson's Day, you're not just encouraging those with the disease to participate. It's friends, families, neighbors, anybody who has a soft spot for this cause.
Yes, you bet. It's we know already the benefits of exercise for the general population. So yes, everyone we're asking them to get out there, do their own bit to improve their own health, but as well to support people with Parkinson's family and friends.
Excellent. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and if you have the opportunity to hear our show today, please tell your friends what you have learned and share the information. We were joined in studio today by Jean Blake, the CEO of Parkinson's BC. Dr. Martin Michonne, neurologist and leader in the field of understanding and treating Parkinson's disease, physiotherapist Nina Bloomfield, and John Hogan, courageous, determined, and an inspiring individual who was diagnosed with Parkinson's at the age of 52. If you want more information about this program or about the society, please go to their website, parkinson.bc.ca. And don't forget to do your bit. Tomorrow is World Parkinson's Day. Thanks for joining us on Boomer Life. This is CL 650.